Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What do you love about music?
To begin with, everything.
Putting on a great show is the most important thing you can do. One great rock show can change the world.
Dad rock usually isn't a term of affection, but for Jeff Tweedy of Wilco, the phrase is spot on. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. Jeff Tweedy teams up with his son, drummer Spencer, for a new project called Tweedy. They join us for a special live performance and candid conversation about rock and roll and family. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions. This is Sound Opinions, and we're going to be talking to Jeff Tweedy, the leader of Wilco, about his new band Tweedy in a minute. Greg, this is a band you have a lot of history with. You wrote the biography of Wilco, Learning How to Die. It's always a weird thing when you spend that much time with a group, when you talk to their parents and everyone in their family. There's a certain level of intimacy that brings you close, but also results in some awkwardness. And it was, you know, here we are with Jeff, his son, his wife Sue Miller, who used to own the club right up the street from where we were taping live, Lounge Acts. It was kind of a family reunion, including you.
Yeah, it was interesting because it was the first in-depth discussion I've had with Jeff, believe it or not, since the book was published 10 years ago. So there was some weirdness beforehand, wondering how is this going to go? And, I think the results speak for themselves. It was a great evening for all of us, I think, in a lot of ways.
I think people enjoy hearing that. But first, we have some music news.
If you have an iTunes account, there is a very good chance that you have heard that song. Even if you don't have an iTunes account, you've probably heard it. That is The Miracle, in parentheses, of Joey Ramone by that band U2 out of Ireland. Been around for a few decades. Perhaps you've heard of them. Self-proclaimed biggest band in the world. They just negotiated a deal with Apple to make its new album, Songs of Innocence, its first in 5 years, free to Apple customers, all 500 million of them. One morning you wake up and there's Bono and company sitting in your iTunes library. They're putting their feet up on the couch and they're saying, hey, we're going to stick around here for a while if you want us for free. Now, a lot of angles to this story, Jim. Why, first of all, would U2 do this? Well, there's 100 million good reasons for it, because Apple's paying them that much to distribute this album. That's a pretty good deal.
That's more than they would have made selling the record, right?
Without a doubt. I mean, in this day of declining record sales, I think U2 makes out handsomely on the revenue front by basically taking $100 million of Apple's money to distribute the record this way. They're going to sell a lot more. Their other stated mission, as I said earlier, tongue-in-cheek, biggest band in the world, well, that's the way they've always envisioned themselves. They figure it's not even worth doing unless we can be extremely popular and reach as many people as possible with our music. They thought this was the most effective way of doing this by aligning themselves with the coolest, albeit biggest, high-tech company out there in the world in some ways, and putting out a record with their distribution and marketing muscle behind it. So it works out on a number of levels for U2 in terms of getting their music out. But Jim, there's a downside to this as well.
Yeah, there have been pros and cons. Let's go to the pros for Bono and Company first. Amazingly, after this free gift of this new album to 500 million people, a lot of people are now paying for U2 music again. Within days of this free gift, 24 of the band's titles had reached the top 200 on the online iTunes chart, and the singles collection, U2 18, was back in the top 10. The Joshua Tree, that's ancient, right? From 1987, Achtung Baby from 91, War from 83, all were in the top 50 again. So people have been prompted to buy U2 music anew after getting the gift of U2 music for free. But I noticed a really interesting generational divide, Greg. I was talking about the U2 album to my students at Columbia College, 20-somethings, right? They didn't want anybody putting their hands in their iTunes, right? iTunes is where I order my music or purchase my music. And, you know, coming on the heels of Apple's scandal with sexy pictures in the cloud being hacked of celebrities, you know, it's kind of like a reminder that Big Brother can just reach out.
Right.
And my students were telling me, we didn't want this. We didn't ask for this.
It's spam.
Why did we get it? It's like spam. So Apple has put out, in response to this negative backlash, has put out a tool that will make removing U2 from your cloud, from your hard drive, easier. And then if you remove it, it's for good. You can't have it again unless you pay for it, right? There have been times, I've been a U2 fan at times, and there have been times when I wished I could remove U2 with one click from my life. We'll talk about this album next week. But first, we want to know what you think of U2's free delivery, this gift of music. Give us a call, 888-859-1800.
Listening to Sound Opinions, and that's a song called I'll Sing It by a new band called Tweety. Music fans, of course, know the name from Wilco and Uncle Tupelo. That'd be the singer and guitarist Jeff Tweety. But Tweety also refers to his son, Spencer, 18 years old, a drummer in the Chicago music scene for a number of years in a band called The Blisters, and now he's graduated to the big time as the band's drummer. And that's not really shocking when you consider the pedigree of Jeff Tweety. I mean, he's been a rock star here for close to 20 years. And Spencer's mother, Sue Miller, has also been a Chicago music mainstay. She co-owned that famous rock club Lounge X for many years here.
We were excited to have both Jeff and Spencer, as well as Jim Elkington on guitar, Liam Cunningham on keyboards, and Darren Gray on bass at a special recording of Sound Opinions Live, supported by Goose Island Beer, in front of an audience at Chicago's Lincoln Hall, just a few doors down from those old stomping grounds of Lounge X. You can check out all of the live performances at soundopinions.org. We also had a candid conversation with the Tweety gentleman about the new album, what it's like to tour and perform with your dad, and how the family's been coping with Sue Miller's battle with lymphoma. We began by asking Jeff why he needed this outlet outside of Wilco, and what made up the new Tweety album Suki Ray's 20 songs.
I'll sing it to you, I'll sing it to you.
Well, first of all, I wrote a lot more than 20 songs. There were lots and lots of songs that I've been messing around with in the studio. Spencer played drums on the last Mavis Staples record, and we had a good time doing that, and I wrote some songs for her. And everybody in Wilco's always been really active outside of the band and busy doing other stuff, And I, oddly enough, have kind of turned out to be the only guy that hasn't made a record without a committee in the whole band, you know. So thought it would be fun to keep doing what I've been doing, you know, kind of making these tracks for Mavis and get started on, who knows what it was, you know, I don't know. At first, I think there was the idea I could make a solo record. Who knows, maybe at some point I would, like, get Cold Feet and they would be Wilco demos or something. But as we got rolling, it started to feel like it had its own energy, its own thing, and just kept doing it.
Well, you mentioned working with Mavis Staples, One True Vine record. It was basically you and Spencer. How did that come about, that Spencer was your choice as the drummer on that record?
Well, Mavis wanted to make a record that was very stripped down. When the first record, You're Not Alone, came out, we did a few things together promotionally where I would just play the acoustic guitar and she would sing, and she liked the way that felt. And I think that was the starting point for the second record, is that we make an acoustic record. And Spencer was on spring break, and some of the songs sounded like they just didn't feel like they were as complete as they should feel without fleshing them out a little bit. So I thought, Spencer's around, he'll play drums on some stuff, and I'll play it for Mavis and see how she feels about expanding the palette a little bit.
And, well, she does understand a thing or two about family members.
Well, I think that that's something, that's one members. Of the reasons that it really resonated with her, and she was very, very into the idea once she heard what was going on. And so, you know, we worked on stuff a little bit without her before we started involving her in the process, because it's just easier that way. And she was busy touring and wanted to get started. So, yeah, so we had this stuff to play for her and she was into it.
Spencer, I just heard this a little while ago. Mavis Staples came to your bar mitzvah.
Actually, she
came
to... It was
my little brother's bar mitzvah.
Came to Sammy's bar mitzvah.
And she sang. She sang a song for him, which was
that
awesome.
Officially makes Sammy cooler than either of you or anybody in the
anybody
universe.
In
that's
the world,
pretty true. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really special.
Yeah.
She's our grandma. She's our adopted grandma.
There's something magical about that. When you've been hugged by that lady, it's like you've been hugged by grace.
Well, she's an angel.
She is.
I mean, if an angel exists to make other people feel better, I don't know what an angel is other than that. And she is that.
You know, Jeff, there's this term that neither Greg nor I, as fans, would ever use. But sometimes when people are being somewhat derogatory about Wilco, they say dad rock.
Yeah, I have no idea what that means.
Well, I guess now it means this, right?
Yeah. Well, the day that the news was announced, it was like a flood of tweets about it. Like, well, I guess we can really call it dad rock now.
Yeah.
It was very clever.
It's like Chief Keefe is a dad. You know? So what does that mean?
It's not... It's not like, you know, Impressionism started as a derogatory like description of some art. So I don't think dad rock's going to turn around like that. I don't think it's going to become
you can't revive it.
You know, like, oh, my God, this is the coolest thing on earth, dad rock. Have you heard of it?
Yeah. I'm really into dad rock, some obscure Japanese records.
Yeah, I'm in a no-win situation anytime it comes up because it's abhorrent. It's ridiculous.
I think
ridiculous.
Usually I'm more offended by it than he is because I get really bitter about it when it's so dismissive.
He's so sweet. He's such a sweet boy.
It's all my fault.
That's right, he says when he's on stage with you.
I got to put Spencer on the spot here, though, because you're 18, right, Spencer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can put myself in your 18-year-old shoes many, many decades, a century ago, actually.
In the previous.
And I don't think I could have worked on my dad in any context at that point. I loved my dad, but I didn't want to have anything to do with him at that point. How did that work out for you?
Well, I think we have a really close family, and it's been easy because for pretty much my whole life we've been jamming and recording songs and playing together in our basement and sort of growing together musically. So it was easy. And it's also like such an insane privilege for me, firstly, to be making a record with Mavis Staples, which was sort of the first project we did together, first big project we did together. I don't have a problem with it. We're just hanging out.
He wants to be here, honest.
Yeah.
Does he?
I mean,
come
it's
out.
Really, it it's, truly is really, it feels really great to play music together.
I threatened to stop feeding him.
Yeah.
I was thinking more though of, you know, there's some, you know, some young women may be attracted to your performance.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, come by afterwards.
That's
and,
where your mind would go.
He's 18,
well,
Jeff.
I got to remind you, it's, I got to remind you, Dad Rock, like, the audiences are a little bit above my...
Oh. Now,
you know, I'm only 18.
Not only am I offended, but everyone here is offended now.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're getting into cougar territory here? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Spencer,
it's dangerous. It's very dangerous.
Stop digging. Stop digging.
This is really devolved here really quickly.
This
hasn't
is,
it?
You know, I think that the that did come up in a discussion one time over dinner with the whole family, and I think that the creepiest thing in the world would be for Spencer to get involved with someone who loves his dad.
Yeah,
a lot.
And,
yeah.
You know, yeah. And this doesn't need to be like personal therapy session for me, but yeah. I mean,
yes, it does.
That has been I've come across that in high school. It's like very troubling. It's a troubling thing, you know.
You've come across what in high school?
You know what? We're done with it. It's okay.
Here's Tweety performing "Summer Noon" from their new album "Suki Ray" live on Sound Opinions. "Summer Noon" by Tweety, live on Sound Opinions from Lincoln Hall in Chicago.
We'll have more with Jeff and Spencer Tweedy in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. And you can watch the entire set of music from our live show at Lincoln Hall via our website, soundopinions.org.
Oh, my sorry, you won't recognize me. Born and bred to be led and be dead by degree. I'm taking a moment to express my regret, for I forget how it goes. As fast as our blood can crackle with blame, the arrows arise to find our embrace too soon. And piercing the place where even the moon would never dream to shine. The deluge they're dreaming turned to pain. Blades of blood.
Sound Opinions is supported by Beats Music, a new music service offering curated playlists, personalized music recommendations, and access to over 20 million songs. Learn more about a 14-day trial of Beats at the App Store or at BeatsMusic.com. Beats Music, the right music for right now.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And our guest this week is Tweedy, the first solo project from Wilco founder Jeff Tweedy. Jeff and his son Spencer, who plays drums for the band, joined us for a special live taping of Sound Opinions presented by Goose Island Beer at Lincoln Hall in Chicago. The new Tweedy album is called Suki Ray, and we return to our conversation by asking Jeff and Spencer about that name.
All of Susie's best friends call her Suki Ray, and her closest friends her whole life have called her Suki Ray because when she was a teenage girl, she was in love with Peter Noon of Herman's Hermits, and his sister is Suki Noon, and so she wanted to convince all of her friends that are to call her Suki Ray so that when she inevitably married Peter Noon or came in, you know, at least got to meet him, she could say, hey, I'm Suki, and, you know, have something, an icebreaker. I think it was just a built-in icebreaker.
We're just getting embarrassing stories about every member of the
Tweedy family.
I
don't think that's embarrassing. I think that that's unbelievably sweet and adorable. And
so
she would leave me for him and still to this day.
You were the consolation prize.
I was the consolation prize.
You're no Peter Noon, but
I have no,
Peter.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
But it was the title that really felt like it clicked, you know?
Cool. Okay, so Jeff, how did these songs seem like Tweedy songs versus Wilco songs for down the road?
I wasn't thinking like that. I don't ever think like that. I just make a bunch of stuff, and then whatever feels the most exciting that day in the studio, whether it's with Wilco or Lucifer or anything that I'm involved in, I don't think any of it is particularly great or terrible. It's just some stuff sounds exciting to me on a particular day.
Some things, like you said, you wrote a lot more than 20 songs, and some of them got shelved. Mm. Some of them felt like it was apparent that they would work well with two people, like an arrangement of just pretty sparse.
Yeah, it's really looking around and seeing who's in the room, and it was just Spencer and I in the room.
I was in the room.
You know, with Wilco, I look around and if there's a couple of guys that get excited about something that I'm presenting, then you can usually develop enough momentum to get it going. Mm. I think almost any of the songs in reality probably could have been Wilco songs. Some maybe, you know, who knows? Certainly the songs that didn't make it on the record, I'm mm-hmm. sure any of those could be on a Wilco record. They probably would be in a different key. I think that's the only thing I would, you know, there's something about playing with six people. It's so much more sound happening. I tend to put Wilco songs in keys that I sing louder. I don't know.
We can belt it.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, ever since AM, all of the AM songs are in keys where I was like, you know, like I'm mumbling because right, I was right. singing them on the couch, and then all of a sudden I'm in a recording studio, and like, and then I had to figure out the hard way that they were very difficult to sing in front of big audiences like that.
Hey, wake up. Your eyes weren't open wide.
What kind of input, Spencer, did Dad give you on your drumming?
Well, we've been playing together for like 18 years, I guess. So I feel like
since birth. Play bongos on his Susie's belly.
So I think that we're like for the most part we're on the same page, and I think that I have influences that match up with the things that we were trying to accomplish in recording. There were moments where I was asked to go in a certain direction, but for the most part, the majority of the songs came about sort of. They're actually like a lot of one takers, a lot of
almost
to brag.
All of them.
I would like to brag about that.
I would brag about that.
So a lot of it, but we recorded a lot of the album live, just the two of us in playing together, and so it was just what we came up with in the moment.
I can answer the question from my point of view. I gave him very little input. I don't know. There's a DNA connection, I guess. I don't know. It's a familial thing that I've never really experienced with any other musicians, even though I've played with guys that are great for, you know, long periods of time, develop musical communication that I feel is on a very high level and exciting. But it's different from his point of view. He's probably been brainwashed and warped because he's had to hear all of my music his whole life, and he's heard, like, the record collection in our house is our record collection, and he has his own records too. But
to answer
great.
Your question, he wasn't nitpicky. There were maybe only a couple things that were specific input, and the rest was just sort of came together.
Let's hear some of Spencer's drumming on the next song, "Flowering," from Tweety, live on Sound Opinions.
Can't retreat.
Tweety with the new song, Flowering, live on Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis, and let's go back to our conversation with Wilco founder Jeff Tweety and his son, Spencer. Here Jeff shares the scoop on when we can expect new Wilco music.
I mean, we'll probably start on something pretty soon. Preliminary recording for Wilco Records is always really, I don't know, it's just getting together and sounding bad, you know? Just like, it's like kind of, I think the point of it is to just kind of cleanse the palate or find something that doesn't sound like exactly like something we've done already. I don't know. It's I guess what just kind of messing around, and that's starting soon. That'll start soon. As far as when a certain amount of momentum will build up and it'll have enough energy to see it through to the end. With Wilco Records, take a long time. They're hard to do. The six people. There's an effort to make it something that everybody can sign off on and be invested in and you know, excited about going out and playing 100-something shows to present to the world. And so, yeah, we have to take our time. But yeah, I think we'll probably have a record out next year. There's no desire to get away from Wilco. That's really not what's happening. It's just
for fun.
Yeah,
I can appreciate though what you just said about two guys getting in a room and making music together. I could see why that would be a little bit more appealing at a certain point.
Well, it's a lot easier. Yeah, it's a lot. And having said that, I've always been sort of amazed at how easily six guys can sit around in a circle and hammer out an arrangement without killing each other and have something come out musical. And so Wilco has a really amazing dynamic like that.
Who's that wrong?
But it is six people, and it is, you know, six people finding a part even can be hard on a song, especially a really simple song, you know. But that's kind of the idea of Wilco, and that's kind of where it has grown to, you know, to be this thing that has these elements, and that's what we take our time trying to make work.
Well, I think the key thing that's pulling you away from this music thing is really the acting career. It's got the Justin Timberlake. It's got the smell of a Justin Timberlake.
I'm so happy
thing
that
going
you
on.
Brought this up because it is where my heart is in.
Yeah. Well, you've been
definitely
in.
Don't be surprised if you see him in a major motion picture next year. Do you know
after
something?
You collect
I don't
the
know.
Emmy. If he gets the Emmy for which one do you think, Spencer's Parks and Recreation or Portlandia? Which
I don't
you
know,
think is more
but
worthy
it seems
of
like an EGOT is in the works for sure.
It really took me a long time to find my motivation.
What was the name of the band?
Land Ho.
Land Ho, yeah. That was my name, actually. They let me name the band.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Hi, my name's Andy, and this barfing lady over here is Leslie. We just need 10 minutes of your time.
To do what?
To convince you to reunite Land Ho.
Listen, it means a lot to me that you guys love the band, and I'm going to tell you the exact same thing I've told everyone who's ever asked us to reunite. No.
We are live at Sound Opinions at Lincoln Hall talking to Jeff and Spencer Tweety. Jeff, let's ask a couple of business questions, because it seems like you're in an enviable place now. You know, Wilco's gotten to a place where you're big enough now that you're your own record company. You're your own support system. You know, you've got it all. You don't need labels anymore. And I mean, I remember talking about this with you during the Yankee Hotel Foxtrot crisis, you know, and trying to find your way. But it seems like you guys are now pointing the way for a lot of bands.
Well, thanks. I mean, I don't know if you can really point the way for anybody the way things are right now. I think everybody has to find their own, navigate their own path through what they call the music business, but it's something very different than the music business that I started out in. But our goal for a very, very long time, even before the Yankee Hotel Foxtrot thing and our dealing with Warner Brothers, and was to be more self-sufficient than other bands that we saw. We felt like the goal is to be able to do this for a long time, and it never occurred to me, even when I was very young, that somebody wouldn't think that way. But there actually are bands. I think there have been lots of bands that really want to get in and make a buck and get out or something. I don't know. It's a crazy concept to me. But our thoughts were always geared along the lines of, like, what gives us the best shot at doing this for a long time? And because of that, and because there was very little interest from the record labels to begin with, even when we had a major label record, you know, deal, we weren't priority material. We weren't the band that they were throwing tons of money at. So that made our decisions a little easier even. But having said that, I think we could have made some different choices, and it wouldn't have been as beneficial to us in the long run. You know, there would have been things like taking more tour support or I don't know, just trying harder to make them happy when it wasn't going to make us happy.
Well, I read an interview you did a year or two ago with the Sun Times, and you were talking about, you know, how you said, maybe I was too immature to feel like I wanted to be the boss for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then I just came to the conclusion that that's not so bad.
Yeah, I think that it took me a long time to grow up and realize that it's not very cool to be dumb. about anything, but at the same time, you know, Tony and I, our manager, Tony Margarita, we've been working together since he was my manager at the record store I worked at in St. Louis. So it's been the longest collaboration I have in my life has been with Tony. And I like to think that even before that was something I could internalize that was okay for me to be the boss, Tony and I kind of operated with a bit of creativity on how we ran our day-to-day operations and the business of it. And now that's something that's fully embraced, you know, like, hey, that's just another way to be creative. That's just another way to communicate with your audience, treat your audience like collaborators or people that are invested in it too. And that's becoming much, much more fashionable, obviously. That seems to be the way forward for a lot of bands. Yeah, I don't know. I just look at it now like every aspect of it, from merchandise to touring to your record label. Just try and have fun with it. Try and make it something that you're proud of, how you do it. Just proud of the whole operation.
You know, recording, too, seems to be an aspect of this that's still important to you. You know, when you put out a 20-song album like you're about to with Tweety, obviously, the long-form format still speaks to you, resonates to you, even though everybody's telling us that's going away and people aren't listening to music that way anymore. Do you see it a long lifespan for that way of approaching recording?
I don't know. There's an audience here. Are you guys excited about a 20-song record? I mean, this is good. This is great. That's a lot of people. When I started playing music, this audience is as big as I would have ever dreamed to have to play to, and there's a lot of people out there still care about records, still care about long form art forms, and having patience to sit through something that's long.
I think
the
album's making a comeback for sure. Even with music streaming, as controversial as it is, people are listening to full records. I mean, I know my friends and I are.
Oddly enough, there's another reason to put out a 20-song record other than embracing the long-form art form of making LPs, and that is we wanted to tour, and it's much more fun to have 20 songs to play than 10.
Yeah,
and that's really why.
Boring.
That's why it's two records. It's really two records. It's, you know, that's going to come on two discs. They could have fit on one, but it's kind of like being there. I just like the idea of there being, you know, shorter portions.
Here's another portion from Tweety. Jeff Tweety on guitar and vocals, Jim Elkington on guitars, Liam Cunningham on keyboards, Darren Gray on bass, and Spencer Tweety on drums. The song's called Low Key, and it's live on Sound Opinions.
All right, let's go. Thank you.
That was Low Key from the band Tweety, live on Sound Opinions from Lincoln Hall in Chicago. Have a comment on Tweety, Wilco, or even Dad Rock? Give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800. Coming up, we'll conclude our session with Jeff and Spencer Tweety on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
So
welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis with Greg Kot, and we're wrapping up our conversation with the new project from Jeff Tweety of Wilco and his son, Spencer. They've dubbed themselves, appropriately, Tweety. Jeff first appeared on the music scene with a band called Uncle Tupelo, playing besides Jay Farrar. When that band broke up, Farrar went on to Sunvolt, Tweety went on to Wilco, and Wilco's been around now for 20 years, which is hard to believe. We asked Jeff about his expectations for Wilco and whether they've been fulfilled 2 decades on.
No one could protect you from the blood in your own veins. No one could predict who would be taking you away.
Well, when Uncle Tupelo broke up, they gave Jay Farrar and myself basically a do-over with the same record deal that Uncle Tupelo had signed and only made one record for. So we ended up with these virtually identical deals with the idea that they were going to keep both of us as two birds in the hand is better, you know, whatever. I don't know what their idea was, but they were just kind of throwing stuff at the wall and they're going to see what sticks. And this is an example of making decisions based on wanting to do it a long time. I think we negotiated to at least let us make two records. They didn't want to just make one record, so let us make two records and give us a chance to make two records. So, but beyond that, I really didn't know if I was ever going to have a major label record deal for the rest of my life or anything like that. And you know, there wasn't a lot of excitement about it. They actually said to me when our record AM came out, "This is great. This is going to be an amazing setup for Jay's record." They're like, for the Sunvolt record. That's the way they were looking at it. You know, like we were still like kind of helping each other out, and you know, this is the Uncle Tupelo team working in tandem. You know, now we got two records, and that's the way it ended up being for them actually, because you know both things ended up doing pretty well and are well enough. You know, mm-hmm. Jay did a lot better with the first record, and then AM did, but that kind of, I don't know, that seemed like the way they had it designed or what they were shooting for at that time. But I didn't expect anything beyond that.
What? No, nothing.
I'm not sour grapes. I don't like.
No,
was,
no.
I thought it's
just great that you know that you have DBPM Records and it all turned out the way it is today, which I think is kind of what you were asking about.
Do you have aspirations to get into music, Spencer? Do you want to, you know, you kind of had a window seat here with your dad's career. What does this appeal to you, doing something like
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. And, yeah, I do. And I try to record on my own. And I try to do stuff, but I'm still very young and still just figuring out how to do that. And I play drums in a band called The Blisters that has been together for 11 years.
Yeah.
and we put out our first record last summer. But yeah, I'm trying to I'm trying to find my way there as well.
So what kind of advice, Jeff, do you have for Spencer? Your crazy kid or go for it or somewhere in between?
Oh, I would never tell anybody they're crazy if doing something they love to do. I mean, why? If my parents were open-minded enough to, like, let me pursue this as something that I was passionate about, then why would I steer him away from anything? That's the crux of any advice Susie and I have given our children, period, is that, you know, the process, the doing of the thing that you love is, that's got to stay the core of it. That's got to stay the main reason that you're doing it. That's got to be the sustaining part of it. All of the other stuff, if you're, you know, wanting to make a living, I don't know. I just think that music is such a beautiful sustaining thing. Arts is such a beautiful sustaining thing to have in your life, making stuff. I just feel like everything that's happened to me has happened because I was able to do that. I was able to be happy doing that and happy with each level that it happened to get me to. And actually, it's more me trying to adapt to the different levels that the band got to. Like, we're playing on festival stages now outside. Mm-hmm. This is something I never aspired to do. And it took a while to learn how to do that. It took a while to learn how to play to a bigger audience. But the core part of it, you know, was I felt better. I feel better when I play music. I like writing songs. I disappear when I write songs. And it's a relief. It's a consolation. It's a sustaining and continuous part of my life I've been very fortunate to have.
We said Sue is here tonight, your wife, your mom, Spencer. And Sue's been public bravely in writing about her battle with cancer and sharing that with people, and people feel a part of it. How much has the music on Suki Ray been something that everybody in the family needed to one degree or another?
Well, it's really been a family project in a lot of ways. I mean, a lot of the music was completed, a lot of the lyrics were completed during the last 6 months, which have been probably the worst time in our family's history, going through a diagnostic period that was excruciating, not knowing for months on end what exactly was going on, and then starting treatment for lymphoma. All these different things were happening simultaneously with having this work to do. That was made more meaningful because of what was going on, at least for me personally. And I don't know. It's weird. I don't remember working that hard, but I finished a double record somehow during this whole period.
Yeah.
And I think it was because I was able to disappear into it still. So everybody knows, and everybody listening can know that. For what's going on right now with Susie, the prognosis is very good, and we're very positive and hopeful. Just so I think that should be stated, so we don't leave people hanging.
Absolutely.
On that. Yeah, you know, it's she's incredibly brave, incredibly strong, and we're looking forward to this all being in our rearview mirror, hopefully soon.
Let's hear the song "Honeycombed" from Tweety live at Lincoln Hall on Sound Opinions.
I can feel the mystery, but I can't play it. Gray like the children are gray. My thoughts are dim, polluted as I am walking out one summer noon. So soon, how will the weather bring? Sing like the children have sung. High as the stars are hung. Before I go, with a rope wrapped around my throat. Loom like an island, dope hooked in cyclone, honeycombed my heart in love. And from above, every cemetery against the bloom, rattle the pigs, visit the silence, waking up an open wound.
We've been here live at Lincoln Hall with Tweety. Thank you so much, guys, for doing this.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Always fun.
All right.
To hear the show again or to watch Tweety's full set of music, visit us at soundopinions.org. Greg, what's on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we've got a record review bonanza. We're going to review new records by U2, Lucinda Williams, Interpol, and more.
Greg, we have some thank yous to say. Special thanks to Adam Yaffe, Andrew Gill, and everyone at Lincoln Hall. Sound Opinions is produced by Jason Saldana, Robin Lynn, and Anthony Martinez.
Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling goes the telephone. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-lingle goes my heart. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling goes the telephone. And I know that the fireworks will start.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So now it's time to hear what you have to say.
New messages.
Hey, Jim and Greg. This is Heather calling from Seacoast, New Hampshire. I wanted to thank you for your edition covering Work songs. The Clash, The Jam, all awesome stuff from them. Lou Reed, yes. Flaming Lips, questionable, but okay. But I did notice there was a glaring omission. Other than Dolly Parton, which was transitional music and you didn't even talk about, there were no women represented in your lineup. One of the things that I noticed was that you were all talking about the way that men worked. And there is a very important way that women work, and that is the daily task of being a mom. And I actually gave birth to my twins on Labor Day, ironically enough. So I thought of Kate Bush's This Woman's Work, which is all about the perils, the process of becoming a mom, of being a mom, and of realizing the responsibility. Not all labor takes place with a punch card and a time clock, and that is the work that we don't get paid for, and it's called a labor of love. And for me, every day is Labor Day. Thanks a lot, guys. Keep up the great work.
Hey, this is Cornelius from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Just listening to your Labor Day work songs episode. I'm a working man myself, and that's the type of music I like. I wanted to recommend a fellow called Bob Wayne, who wrote Working Man's Ballad, a working man's song. Good enough for Hank 3 to use in one of his albums.
I work outside in the pouring rain when it's cold and struggles of a working man.
That sums it up pretty good and should be on your list. Thanks. Love the show.
Hey, this is CJ from Philly. Just heard your show on work songs. Loved it. You played John Lennon's Working Class Hero. The first version of that song that I heard was done by Tin Machine, David Bowie's band, in the late 80s. David Bowie, a former friend of John Lennon. I think it's the only Lennon song, at least it's the only Lennon song I know that he covered. He and his band, they switch it from 3-4 to 4-4. They put it with electronic instruments, and they play the heck out of it. It's on their first album. If you haven't heard it, you should check it out. Have a good day. Bye.
My name's Jerry. I'm calling from Connecticut. I'm 70 years old. When I was about 16, I bought that James Brown album, and to this day, I think it's the best live album ever made. I actually wrote a letter to James Brown at the time, got a response from his manager with a beautiful 8x12 picture of James Brown. I'll never forget it. Thank you.
Don't go home. Don't go.
No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.